you know, what I would call schools that are confident about focusing on the transcendent. And then there are people who just want a better education. They want, they hear, you know, it's the hearsay is that certain schools are performing better. Their kids, you know, they come out of the classical schools, go to public high schools, and they're immediately placed into Latin III instead of, you know, first year Spanish. So I think it's both, but I think there continues to be, I think, more data coming out that kids who are in classical schools are performing academically better than regular public schools and maybe even some charter schools. And the more data we hear about that, I think the movement is going to grow even more.
So your daughter's in fourth grade. She's in classical school. What are the things that she's been studying this year that really impress you?
So what I love primarily is that the curriculum is based on history. So they basically start history of the world with books written by Susan Weiss Bauer called The Story of the World in first grade. And go chronologically. And then all of the English, the literature that they do, the art that they look at, the music that they study, everything else is predicated upon where they, you know, what era of history they're studying. So there's a real purposeful integration. So, for example, early in the year, because she came in fourth grade, they were at the point, sort of the turn of the century, the 19th century, and we're studying the Crimean War, and so she had to memorize the charge of the Light Brigade.
wait, the whole thing?
The whole thing. And
wow, the Valley of Death, the 600.
Yes, but what really shocked me is how much she enjoyed doing it and how easy it seemed to be for her to do it. Same thing, Gettysburg Address. She when studying the Civil War, she had to memorize in fourth grade the entire Gettysburg Address and can recite it with meaning, with feeling.
I think it is oppressive. I think it is restrictive to have kids do this rote memorization. You're turning them into robots, and I think they should be able to write their own poems and read those, okay?
It is such a delight to see how happy and how proud she is at some level. She knows that she is learning about some things that matter. People who sacrificed for a cause, you know, regardless of, you know, those are two different wars, but she gets that.
You know, my son did Paul Revere's Ride a couple of years ago, and you know, the kids love the rhythm, they love the rhyme, they love being able to stand up and recite stanza after stanza. They feel the real accomplishment. They sit down with a big smile on their faces. And when you think about how many songs these kids memorize, of course they can memorize long poems. This isn't too much for them.
Not at all. And they thrive on it. And the thing that I love about it, as I often have argued, you know, when, in other contexts, is once it's memorized, it's theirs. It's theirs for life. No one can ever take it away from them. They will always know that. They may forget bits and pieces of it, but it's very powerful.
Yeah, yeah. There's a movie you could show your daughter with Errol Flynn from the 1930s. I think it was called The Charge of the Light Brigade. So that's good. But that's good. Memorization and people who, you know, who put memorization down don't realize all the things that come out of memorizing a poem. One, you build your vocabulary. Two, if they recite before the class, you're developing the speech, the projection, you're giving them a demeanor and a bearing in order to stand in front of a group and speak. And finally, you have to get into another state of mind, right? You've got to get into the poet's head or the character's head in order to recount this poem the way it wants to be recounted. That's a great thing for kids to do. They're playing. They're play acting. And so the memorization, and also a memory is a muscle, right? The more you use it, the stronger it gets. So that sounds wonderful. Okay, one more thing they're studying.
Well, the art is amazing. They're doing actually the it was an NEH program, I think, from long ago, and Picturing America. And so there's giant size posters of American painters, paintings, at the same time that they're learning in their art classes, a very classical approach to learning, drawing based. So they learn to draw, first before they go into other media. So I think it's the integration of the art with the history and, the focus on actual, basic content first and building that very slowly and purposefully. In Latin, for example, she's learning to diagram sentences and understanding English sentence structure because of what she's understanding about Latin and how English derives, how many English words derive from Latin. So it's just, it's so many things on so many levels.
What is she going to do? Does this school go through 8th grade or 12th grade?
So it goes through 8th grade currently. Next year will be the first year that they have a high school. And by the way, they do call it, the grades K through 5 are the grammar school. 6 through 8 is the logic school. And the high school will be the rhetoric school. So they're very focused on the trivium, which is and very intentional about that.
I think this as more parents find out about the curriculum of these schools and how this is just going to benefit your daughter when she gets to the next level, when she goes to college. Her teachers are going to, her professors are going to love her for her formation. But I think the parents, you could almost be utilitarian about it, not talk about this is a great formation for my daughter's knowledge and character and her spiritual well-being, but also it's really going to give you an advantage when you go to college, because if you go into those college classes, many of which are general ed requirements in U.S. history or politics or whatever, if you have read the books that are going to be the background knowledge for a lot of these materials in that classroom, and the student sitting next to you hasn't, you've got a big leg up. And it's going to show at that level, because the teacher is not going to take the time, too much time, to kind of coach those students who didn't get the formation to bring them up to par. College teachers don't function that way. They see the kids a few hours a week. Oftentimes, they never get to know the kids' names. And so they either, the kids in the room either get it when the teacher just makes a passing reference to the Renaissance, or they're a little bit lost. And so I love hearing about stories about what your daughter's learning. I love hearing the classical school in this area. Is it growing?
Yes. So that's one of the things that also drew me to it, having served on accreditation teams and school evaluation teams. It was almost as if what I learned about how the school had grown was precisely the way you would expect a charter school that was doing a great job. I mean, they started in a church basement. They grew the student population. They rented a old public school building. Now they own the public school building. I think this is the first year that they have 2 kindergartens and 2 first grades. So it's really growing and thriving in the way that the founders intended it to. And they have a strategic plan and fundraising plans for the future, so that the high school will, eventually will have many more children than it will in its first year, which I think will be tough.
Any resentment from the public school world in the area at this?
I honestly don't know. I think if anything, the public high schools and even the middle schools, from what I hear, if students for whatever reason, have to send their kids to the public schools for financial reasons or geographic reasons, they find that the kids who have been to the classical school do so much better that they're probably, like you said about the college professors, I think they're happy that they have students who are so capable.
10 years from now, this movement is going to be going stronger than ever.
I have great hope that it will be. The more I learn about the networks of classical schools and the different types of networks that there are and support mechanisms for them, associations that are providing resources, publishers who are publishing more materials, even teacher training programs. I understand now that St. John's College, where I did my graduate work in Annapolis, is offering a teaching certificate, a master's degree in teaching, liberal arts. So, I mean, which is just amazing to me. So even it's wonderful to know that there's some education schools, as small as the programs may be now. I think there may be more and more of them, especially, you know, if you look at the success of programs like what Great Minds is doing, the Wit and Wisdom ELA program that I've worked on. So I have in full disclosure, but it's content rich. It's not a basal reader. It's actual texts, and it's integrated with history and science. The more popular those kinds of programs become, the more schools need teachers who can teach that kind of a curriculum. So I'm encouraged to think that we may see an uptick.
On that note, thank you, Sheila Bird Carmichael.
You're welcome, Mark. Great to talk to you.